continued. An exodus of wagons and riders heading east, refugees from New London returning to their homes on the border. None saw Brenner. But all of them shuddered as they passed, as though they had hit a pocket of freezing cold. Brenner finally straightened, smiling. A further hint of colour had come back into her cheeks. She grabbed the bloody knife and the bag of food, then turned her steps southeast. Javel wrapped his cloak more tightly around himself, wishing he could somehow draw into the shadows of the overhanging building. Another Mort street patrol had passed him only a few minutes ago. Sooner or later, someone was going to notice that he was simply standing there, not moving, and assume that he was up to no good. The address Dyer had discovered sat opposite. A stately brick house, three stories, surrounded by a high stone wall with iron gates. Javel could not even peek in the windows, for two guards stood just inside the gates, opening them only for certain people. According to Dyer, Ali's buyer had been a Madame Arnaud, but that was the only information Javel was going to get. Ever since they had seen the Queen on the Rue Grange, Ali might as well have dropped off the face of the earth. Dyer and Galen had moved their base to an abandoned factory in the steel district, and their evening seemed to be taken up entirely with unexplained errands and secret nighttime meetings with men Javel did not recognize. These men were Mort and carried steel, but they were not soldiers. There was a rescue attempt underway, and Javel felt like more of a nuisance than ever. Across the street, an open wagon circled around the house from the back. They must have stables back there, for when men arrived, one of the guards on the door was quick to take their horses around the side. Javel had already seen several men come and go. Two of them had been drunk. An awful realization was growing upon him, turning his stomach and weakening his knees. It could be any sort of house, he told himself. But that was nonsense. This neighborhood might be cleaner than the gut, but some things were the same everywhere. He knew what he was looking at. He rubbed a hand across his brow and found that he was perspiring even in the late autumn chill. He had known that these were the odds, he reminded himself. No one bought a pretty woman like Ali to make her into a servant, and he had done his best to accept the fact that she might be a whore. But now he had begun to wonder if his best would be good enough. When he imagined his wife under another man, he wanted to kick and punch, to break things. High, merry laughter made him look up. A group of five women had emerged from the front of the house, chattering among themselves. They carried bags on their shoulders. All of them were tarted up, dressed in glittering fabrics, their eyes painted, their hair piled atop their heads. Ali stood in the middle. For a long moment, Javel couldn't move. It was his Ali, all right. He could see her distinctive blonde curls, now gathered in a bunch on top of her head. But her face was so different. Older, yes, lines at the corners of her eyes, but that wasn't the real change. His Ali had been sweet. This woman looked sharp. There was a tightness about her mouth. She laughed as merrily as the rest, but not the laughter Javel had known. Broad and secretive, cold as the skim of ice on a dark lake. Javel watched, astounded, as she climbed into the wagon of her own free will and seated herself beside the other women, still laughing. A man, tall and burly, had followed them out the door. As he climbed into the wagon, Javel saw the flash of a knife beneath his coat. another guard then? Although Javel had already noticed, in his explorations of Domain, that most prostitutes were treated far better here than in New London. Even the street girls were not molested. He did not know why 5 high-end whores should need a guard in Domain, but with both the guard and the driver to take into consideration, Javel could not take the chance of approaching the wagon. The driver clicked to the horses and left the enclosure of the walls. As though in a dream, Javel followed, forcing himself to stay more than 100 feet behind. A dark hole had opened inside him. Over the past 6 years, he had imagined Ali's life often, many images pouring through his head, driving him into the pub just as surely as a man would drive goats to market. But he had never pictured her laughing. When the wagon halted for traffic at the next intersection, Javel crept closer, ducking into an adjacent alley, and made a second unpleasant discovery. All 5 women, including Ali, were speaking Mort. The wagon turned into the Rue Grange, and Javel followed, though he was forced to duck and dodge. This was the marketing segment of the Rue, and the street was always busy, crowded with vendors' stalls and customers for the shops. He was beginning to lose the wagon when, miraculously, the driver slowed, pulling to one side so that the women could alight and spread along the sidewalk. 2 of them crossed the street, and Javel realized, astounded, that this was a shopping excursion. Ali went straight into an apothecary. The driver remained with the wagon, and the guard stayed with him, but his eyes roved the street continuously. Javel got the sense that he would be ready to move at the first sign of trouble. Javel slipped closer, not even sure what his plan was. Part of him wanted to flee back to the safety of the warehouse, to the time when he knew nothing of Ali's fate at all. Keeping a weather eye on the guard and driver, he strolled casually toward the apothecary. People jostled him, but he ducked and dodged around them, watching the door. The driver was telling some story now, the guard smirking, and Javel slipped past them and inside the shop. He found Ali in a darkened corner, waiting in front of the counter. The apothecary was nowhere in sight, but Javel could hear the sound of bottles being moved behind a small green curtain. He wished that he could do this in other circumstances, without an audience that might reappear at any moment, but he also realized that he might never get such a chance again. It was now or never. Ali? She looked up, startled, and Javel felt the world shift on its axis as he saw her eyes, cold and distrustful beneath their violet-painted lids. She looked at him for a long moment. "What do you want?" "I've come..." Javel felt his throat lock, cutting off the words. He summoned his memories, those nights sitting half asleep in pubs, Ali's face floating behind his eyes, the hatred for himself that had washed over him in endless waves. 6 long years he had left her here, so that she could become the woman before him. If he left her here again, how would he live with himself afterward? "I've come to take you home," he finished awkwardly. Ali emitted a brief, throaty sound that he finally realized was a chuckle.
"Why?"
"Because you're my wife." She began to laugh, the sound like a slap to Javel's face. "We can get you out of here," he told her. "I have friends. I can keep you safe."
"Safe," she murmured. "How sweet."
Javelle flushed. Ali, my name is Alice. I've come here to rescue you. A knight in shining armour, she exclaimed brightly, but her eyes did not change. And Javelle heard a great deal of anger just beneath her bright words. And where were you 6 years ago, Sir Knight, when your bravery could have done me some good? I followed you, Javelle insisted. I followed you all the way down the Mort Road. She stared at him for a long, cold moment. And? Thorn's people were too powerful. I couldn't do anything. I didn't think we could get away. And in all the years since, I was... But there was nowhere to go from there. What could he tell her, that he'd been at the pub? I tried, he finished brokenly. All right, you tried, Ali replied. But since you were a coward then, you don't get to claim bravery now. You're 6 years too late. I have built a life here. I am content. Content? You're a whore. Ali gave him another long, measuring look. That look had always been able to make Javelle feel about 2 feet tall, but he had only seen it a few times during their marriage, usually when he had promised to do something and forgotten. He felt as though a spell had been cast upon her. If he could only get her away from here, he could surely break it and change her back.
"Is anything wrong, Alice?" a voice asked.
Javelle turned and saw the burly guard who had been on the wagon standing just inside the doorway. His gaze was fixed on Javelle, and the look in his eyes made Javelle shudder. The man would like nothing better than to beat him to a pulp. "Nothing at all," Ali replied brightly. "Just trawling." At this, Javelle's mouth dropped open, and he suddenly understood the dual purpose of the shopping trip, the reason for the women's fine dresses and heavy paints.
"Well, let me know if you need anything, ma'am."
Clearly disappointed, the guard backed out of the shop. Javelle suddenly realized that he had understood the man perfectly, that he had been speaking in tear. Violence in every muscle, that guard, but his manner toward Ali was utterly deferential. Javelle turned back to Ali, wishing he could take his last words back, but he sensed that it wouldn't matter. "I am a whore indeed," Ali replied after a long moment. "But I am working, Javelle. I earn my own money and answer to no one." "What about your pimp?" he shot back, hating the venom in his own voice but unable to control it. "I pay rent to Madame Arnaud. Reasonable rent, far more reasonable than the rent on a similar space in New London." Javelle could not reply. He only wished that he might have this Madame Arnaud's neck in his hands even once. "In return, I get a suite of beautiful rooms and 3 cooked meals a day. I am well guarded from predators, I work my own hours, and I choose my own clientele." "What sort of whorehouse gives a whore that much freedom?" he demanded. "It's bad business, if nothing else." Ali's eyes narrowed, and, if possible, the coldness in her voice became even deeper, sharper. "The sort that realizes a happy, healthy prostitute is a more profitable one. I earn 3 times your salary as a gate guard."
"But we're still married. You're my wife."
"No. You gave me away when you watched me climb into the cage 6 years ago. I want nothing from you, and you have no right to demand anything from me." Javelle opened his mouth to protest. Surely marriage could not be dissolved so easily, even in Mortmain. But at that moment, the apothecary reappeared from behind the green curtain. He was a tiny, balding man with spectacles, holding a small box in his hands.
"Here you are, lady," he said,
offering the box to Ali. He too spoke Tyr, and this puzzled Javel, who had heard no Tyr on the streets of Domain, and had been forced to pick up his tiny smattering of Mort word by word.
2 months' worth, this is, and you want to make sure to take each one with a substantial meal. They may increase your sickness otherwise.
Ali nodded, producing a purse full of coin.
Thank you. Come back in 2 months' time and I will mix you another batch. But you want to discontinue use after the 6th month, else they may harm the baby.
At the final word, Javel felt a wave of unreality wash over him. He barely marked Ali handing over several coins and tucking the box into her bag. The apothecary looked between the two of them and then, clearly sensing the tense atmosphere, disappeared behind his curtain again.
"You're pregnant," said Javel,
not so much to question Ali as to convince himself.
"Yes."
She stared at him, as though daring him to continue.
"What will you do?"
"Do? I will have my baby and raise a fine child."
"In a brothel."
Ali's gaze pinned him like sunlight.
"My child will be cared for and then schooled by 3 women Madame Arnaud keeps for no other reason. And when my child gets older, there will be no shame in knowing that mother was a whore. What do you think of that?"
"I think it's criminal."
"You would, Javel. I might once have thought so too. But this city is better to women than New London has ever aspired to be. Perhaps it was brave of you to come here, I don't know, but yours is a low-risk bravery, it always was, and I deserve better than that. If you value your skin, don't ever approach me again."
She swept outside, banging the door shut behind her, leaving Javel still pressed against the wall. Claustrophobia gripped him. The shop seemed suddenly tiny, but he didn't dare go outside, not until he knew she was gone. He prayed the apothecary would not emerge from behind his curtain, and by some miracle, the man did not. Finally, when it felt as though hours had passed, Javel peeped through the glass-paned door of the shop and saw that the wagon was gone. He took a deep breath and went outside. The rue went on just as ever, which seemed strange to Javel. How could the city continue to function normally when everything had changed? A sweet smell was in the air, pastries from the bakery nearby, but to Javel, the smell was cloying, sweetness over filth, just like this entire city. He had spent 6 years worrying about Ali, suffering for Ali. And now he had no idea what to do. Going back the way he had come seemed intolerable, going forward seemed worse. And night was coming down. He stood on the footpath, cradling his head in his hands like a man deep in thought, but his mind was empty. He took his hands from his eyes, looked up, and found everything clear before him. He was standing in front of a pub. Even the mace could not find the 2 priests. The Queen's Guard was supposed to stay with the mace at all times. They had been charged to do so by the Queen herself, and Isha could not imagine that any of the others took that charge less seriously than she did herself. But the mace was the mace, and if he wanted to disappear, they could not stop him. Yesterday he had gone, and now he reappeared just as suddenly through the secret door in the kitchen, causing Miller to scream in fright as she tended a pot of stew. The mace's disappearances were maddening, but even Isha understood that the mace tolerated them all by only the barest margin, that he was made to guard, not be guarded. Sometimes he just had to leave, to be somewhere else without any of them around. Isha had assumed that the mace went out drinking or spying, but an overheard conversation between Elston and Corin told her different. He was out looking for the keep priest, Father Tyler, and a second priest, Father Seth, both of them bountied by the Arvath.
"The Caden are looking for them too," Corin remarked. "They want bounty. Ours or the Arvath's makes no difference. Who knew that two old men could stay so well hidden?"
"They won't hide forever," Elston rumbled. "And every time the captain leaves the keep, it becomes more likely that the Holy Father will get wind of it."
Isha would have liked to hear more, but in that moment Corin noticed her in the doorway and shooed her out. Each time the mace returned from one of these expeditions without the two priests, he seemed more discouraged. Isha thought it likely that Father Tyler was dead, for it seemed unlikely that the timid priest could hide for long. She wasn't the only one who held this view, but no one quite dared say so to the mace. They had learned to leave him alone at such times, but today, as soon as the mace collapsed in one of the chairs around the table, he began bellowing,
"Arliss! Get out here!"
The words reverberated through the floor of the audience chamber.
"Arliss! Be patient, you thick bastard!"
Arliss shouted down the corridor.
"I can't run!"
The mace settled into a hunch, an ugly look on his face. His inability to find the two priests was only part of the problem, Isha thought. The real problem was the empty silver throne. The queen's absence weighed on all of them, but heaviest on the mace. Isha thought that beneath his impassive exterior, the captain might be suffering even more than Pen. Arliss dragged himself from the mouth of the corridor.
"Yes, Mr. Mace."
"What's the latest from the Holy Father?"
"Another message this morning. Unless we produce Father Tyler and renew the Arvath's property tax exemption, he threatens to expel us all from the church."
"Who is us?"
"The entire keep. From the queen on down."
The mace chuckled, rubbing his red eyes with one hand.
"It's no laughing matter, man. I've got no use for God, but this place is full of devout people. There are practicing Christians in the guard. They will care, even if you don't."
"If they're fool enough to take the word of God from that piece of shit in the Arvath, they deserve the flames."
Arliss shrugged, though Isha could see he would have liked to say more.
"They demanded only Father Tyler, not Father Seth."
"Only Father Tyler. And the bounty has doubled again."
"Strange. Still no word on what happened when he fled the Arvath."
"A scuffle. Some sort of alarm in the Holy Father's chambers. That's all I could dig up."
"Strange," the mace repeated.
"By the way, he's no longer Father Tyler or even the keep priest in these little missives. The Holy Father's given him a new name."
"What's that?"
"The Apostate."
The mace shook his head.
Anything else while I was gone?
Another village was attacked in the foothills.
What kind of attack?
Arliss shook his head.
We only have 2 survivors, sir, and their reports don't make much sense. Monsters and ghosties. Give me a few more days.
Fine. What else?
Arliss turned to Elston, who suddenly looked acutely uncomfortable.
We have to talk about Penn, sir,
he muttered.
What about Penn?
Elston looked down, searching for words, and Arliss took over.
The boy's been drinking too much.
I know.
I'm not finished. Last night, he got into a brawl. A public brawl.
Isha's eyes widened, but she said nothing, lest they remember she was there and shoo her out, as Corin had the other day. Pen, she thought, and shook her head almost sadly.
Lucky he was in one of my gaming pubs, or he might have been killed. He took on 5 men without a sword. As it is, he's taken a good beating. I tried to keep it quiet, but news will probably leak out. It always does.
Where is he?
In the quarters, sleeping it off.
The mace stood, his face grim.
I'm sorry, sir, Elston said miserably. I've tried to wrangle him, but never mind, El. This mess I made myself.
The mace headed down the hallway toward the guard quarters, moving in vast, purposeful strides. After a moment, Elston followed, then Corin and Kib and Isha trailed warily behind them. They reached the far end of the hallway and were brought up short by the sharp crack of a palm smacking flesh.
Get your ass up!
Penn mumbled something.
We've coddled you long enough, you lovesick brat. Get out of that bed or I will kick you out, and I won't be careful what I break on the way. You're embarrassing yourself and this guard. You're embarrassing me.
Why?
I picked you, you little shit!
The mace roared.
Do you think you're the only boy I saw on the streets who was good with a blade? I picked you. And now you fold. Right when I need you the most.
Penn mumbled something else. He was still drunk, Isha realized, or at least deeply hungover. She had heard a similar mush of words from Dar many times. Now louder.
I'm a close guard and you don't need a close guard.
Penn's voice rose.
We sit here doing nothing while she's over there. There's no one for me to guard.
Wood splintered, and there was a thump followed by Penn's bellow of pain. Should we go in? Isha whispered. But Elston shook his head and raised a finger against his jagged teeth. A hissing, sliding sound came through the doorway. The mace was dragging Penn across the floor, his breath roughened with exertion.
You are the smart one, boy. You were supposed to captain this guard after the rest of us get too old and slow. And here you are, wallowing in misery like a pig in shit.
Isha felt a tug on her shirt tail and looked down to find her sister Glee peering up at her.
Glee, she whispered, you know you're not supposed to be down here.
Glee continued to stare at her unseeing, and Isha realized that she was in one of her trances.
Glee, can you hear me?
Your chance,
Glee whispered. Her eyes were so empty they seemed hollow.
You'll see it clear. they turn the corner, and you grasp your chance.
Isha's lips parted. She could not pay attention to Glee now, for the business between the mace and pen continued violent. She heard more breaking furniture, followed by the thud of a punch.
Go find Maman, Glee.
She turned Glee around and gave her a gentle push, sending her down the corridor. Isha watched her for a few seconds, troubled, before turning back to the guard quarters. Elston and Kib were leaning around the doorframe, and Isha, screwing up her courage, got down on all fours and stuck her head past Elston's legs to peek into the room. Pen was bent over, his head inside one of the basins that lined the far wall. The mace stood over him, holding the back of his neck, and Isha had the impression that if Pen tried to come up too soon, the mace would shove him under. Elston signalled, asking if they should leave, but the mace merely shrugged. Pen came up and took a great gasp of air, his brown curls plastered slickly to his head. Isha winced as she saw his face, a bright sunrise of bruises, both eyes black, and a wide slice of dried blood on his cheek. The mace did not seem concerned.
Are you sober now, boy?
Why do we not act? Pen howled. We stay here, waiting and waiting, while she's over there being...
The mace slapped him.
You have a nerve, Pen. If you had ever looked past your own misery, you would see it plain. We have a city of people who need to get home, a church that wants to crack this throne down the middle, and a festering boil under the gut. You know the Queen, Pen. If we left this mess here untended just to get her back, she would kill us both.
Without her here, it all grows worse. The church grows worse.
The mace's eyes flickered.
True. And you could be of great help, but instead you drown your sorrow in drink and brawling. You think the Queen would enjoy seeing you like this? Would she be proud of you?
Pen stared at the ground.
She would find you pathetic, Pen. Just as I do.
The mace took a deep breath, folding his arms.
Have a wash, and put on some clean clothes. Then get out of here. Do what you need to do. Think about whether you want to remain a part of this guard. You have 2 days. Come back at your best, or don't come back at all. Understood?
Pen drew breath in a sharp hiss, his bloodshot eyes wounded. Isha hoped the mace would slap him again. But the mace merely headed for the doorway, shooing them all out.
I'm sorry, sir,
Elston repeated.
Not your fault, El,
the mace replied, shutting the door of the quarters behind him.
I bent an old rule, and I shouldn't have. Do you think he'll come back? Yes,
the mace replied shortly. Arliss was waiting for them outside his office, holding his usual sheaf of papers, but now Ewan had joined them, peeping around Arliss's shoulder like a bashful child.
We have estimates on the harvest,
Arliss began, but the mace cut him off.
Ewan, what ails you?
Ewan emerged from behind the treasurer, his cheeks flushed a dull red.
I would like to talk to you, sir.
Go ahead.
Ewan took a deep breath, as though commencing a speech.
I'm not a Queen's Guard. You have been very kind to me, sir, you and the Queen, to let me wear the cloak and act the part. But I'm not a real Queen's Guard. and I never will be."
The mace looked sharply at Elston.
"Has someone been speaking to you about this, Ewan?"
"No, sir. Everyone has been as kind as yourself,"
Ewan replied, blushing harder.
"It took me some time to work it out in my head, but I have now. I'm not a real Queen's Guard, and I should like to be useful again."
"And how would you do that?"
"The same way I always have, sir. As a jailer. You have a prisoner loose."
"A prisoner?"
The mace stared at him for a long moment.
"Jesus, Ewan. No."
"I should like to be useful again,"
Ewan replied stubbornly.
"Ewan, do you know how we captured Brenna the first time?"
"Corin came upon her by accident, dreaming deep in one of Thorn's morphia dens. You've heard what happened to Will downstairs. Knowing what we do now, I think Corin was very lucky that Brenna didn't see him coming. I wouldn't send the best sword in the tier to lay hold of that witch. I certainly can't send you."
Ewan firmed his shoulders until he stood very straight.
"I know what she is, sir. I knew it the day I first saw her. And I heard about what she wrote on the wall. She means to harm the Queen."
The mace frowned.
"Have you spoken to your father about this?"
"My father is dead now, sir. But even dying, he told me to do whatever I might to protect the Queen."
The mace did not reply for a long moment, but Isha could see that he was troubled.
"Ewan, she's not an ordinary prisoner. You can't kill her, for the Queen gave her word to keep her alive. But if you try to take such a witch alive, I think you will die in the attempt. I appreciate your courage, but I can't let you do this. The Queen would say the same. I'm sorry."
Ewan stared silently at the ground.
"We will find something else for you to do. Something to help the Queen. I promise."
"Yes, sir."
"Dismissed."
Ewan went down the hall toward the audience chamber, his shoulders slumped.
"Perhaps you should have let him go,"
Arliss remarked quietly.
"That would be a fine legacy for me as regent, wouldn't it? Sending a child on a suicide mission."
"He wants to do something honorable, sir," Elston broke in unexpectedly. "It might be good to allow it."
"No, I'm done with being a killer of children."
Isha froze, but no one else seemed surprised by his words.
"Those days are long gone for you,"
Arliss murmured, but the mace chuckled bitterly, shaking his head.
"You mean to be kind, old man. But no matter how we try to outdistance the past, it's always very close. I'm done with those days, but that doesn't mean they're done with me."
"You're a good man now."
"Aye, I am,"
the mace replied, nodding, but his eyes were hollow, almost damned.
"But it does not wipe out what came before."
They continued down the hallway, discussing the harvest, but Isha remained where she was, almost rooted to the floor, her mind running over the words again and again, trying to make sense of them. She could not. She thought the mace was the best man in the Queen's wing, except perhaps for Venner. And she was unable to reconcile the captain of the guard she knew with the picture his words had planted. A man who strode through ranks of small forms wielding a scythe. A killer of children. 2 hours later, they assembled in the throne room for the regent's audience. Elston, Isha, Corin, Devin, and Kib were grouped around the dais, the rest of the guard scattered around the room. The mace sat in one armchair atop the dais, and Arliss beside him in another, as they began to let the petitioners in. The empty throne gleamed in the torchlight.
"God help me," the mace muttered. "I used to wonder why the queen couldn't keep her temper at these things. Now I wonder how she managed at all."
Arliss chuckled.
"Queenie's rage was a powerful thing. Entertaining, too. I miss that girl."
"We all miss her," the mace replied gruffly. "Now let's be about her business."
Isha turned toward the doors, fixing her face into the mask of impassive stoicism that Elston recommended. The nobles came first, an old custom that, more than once, Isha had heard the mace and Arliss discuss discarding. But in truth, it made business move faster. Fewer nobles attended the mace's audiences now, and today there were only two, both petitioning for tax relief. No one was working the fields, and even Isha thought that this must be remedied, and soon. Not only would there be no food, but the empty fields and farms gave every noble in the kingdom an excuse to dodge tax. Lady Bennet and Lord Taylor listened, their faces glum, while the mace explained with extraordinary patience that changing events made it impossible for him to decide the issue yet. Isha knew that Arliss was working on the problem of the harvest, of getting people home, but it was a slow business to provision families for such a journey on foot. Both petitioners left empty-handed and disgruntled, just as so many had before. After the nobles came the poor. Isha liked them better, for their problems were real. Unredressed crimes, missing livestock, disputes over property. The mace often came up with solutions that Isha would never have thought of. The guard tended to relax a bit during this portion of the audience, even Isha, who was almost enjoying herself. Right up until the moment the crowds parted, and she found herself facing her father. Isha's hand went automatically to her knife, and she was beset by such a conflicting mixture of feelings that at first she could not separate them. There was relief. Relief because she had grown several inches since the spring, and Dar no longer seemed quite so tall. There was hatred, a long-burning fire that had only sharpened with distance and time, searing through her head and gut. And last, and most urgent, she felt a need to find her younger sisters, Glee and Mern, to find them and protect them from everything in the world, starting with Dar. The mace had clearly recognized Dar as well, for a muscle had begun to twitch in his jaw. He leaned down and asked in a low voice,
"Do you wish to leave, Hellcat?"
"No, sir," Isha replied, wishing her resolve was as firm as her voice. Dar no longer loomed over her, perhaps, but he looked the same as ever. He laid stones for a living, and his top half seemed twice the size of his bottom. As he approached the throne, Isha drew her knife, clenching it in a fist that was suddenly wet with perspiration. The mace beckoned Kib and murmured,
"Make sure Anderlei doesn't come in here."
Dar was not alone, Isha saw now. He had emerged from the crowd with a priest beside him. The priest wore the white robes of the Avath, but the hood was pulled low over his brow, and Isha could not see his face. After a glance in her direction, a single sharp look that Isha could not read, Dar ignored her, focusing all of his attention on the mace.
"You again, Borwin?" the mace asked in a tired voice. "What's on the menu today?"
Dar looked as though he meant to speak, but then the priest moved forward and pushed his hood back. Isha heard the low hiss of the mace's breath, and she drew her knife automatically as Elston jumped forward. The rest of the guard quickly moved to surround the foot of the dais, and Isha went with them, jumping up two risers to tuck herself behind Kay and Kib.
"Your Holiness," the mace said slowly. "What an honor to have you here. The last time was thrilling."
The Holy Father himself? Isha tried not to stare, but she couldn't help it. She had thought that the Holy Father would be old, but he was much younger even than Father Tyler. His hair still nearly black, his face traced with only the lightest of lines. The mace said that the Holy Father never went anywhere unguarded, but Isha didn't see any guards in the crowd around him. Still, she took her cue from the men around her who had ranged themselves in a defensive posture around the mace.
"I come to demand justice from the Queen's government,"
the Holy Father announced in a deep, carrying voice. And now Isha noticed his eyes, blank, almost reptilian, betraying no emotion.
"Our brother parishioner, Borwin, came to us with a grievance some weeks ago. The Queen has denied him his parental rights." "Has she now?"
The mace leaned back in his armchair.
"And why would she do that?" "For gain. She wished to keep Borwin's wife as her servant."
The mace pinned Borwin with a long stare.
"This is your tale of the week. It's a foolish one. Andalai is no one's servant."
"I am confident in the truth of Borwin's tale,"
the Holy Father replied.
"Borwin has been a good member of Father Dean's parish for some years, and..."
"You didn't come here to plead a case for this nonce. What do you want?"
The Holy Father hesitated, but only for a moment.
"I also come to personally demand the return of the apostate."
"As I have told you perhaps 10 times now, we don't have him."
"I believe otherwise."
"Well, this wouldn't be the first time you believed something without evidence, would it?"
The mace's tone was mocking, but a large vein had begun to pulse in his forehead.
"We don't have Father Tyler, and I will not discuss the subject further."
The Holy Father smiled blandly.
"Then what of Borwin's case?"
"Borwin is a paedophile. Do you really wish to tie the Avath to his cause?"
"That is slanderous,"
the Holy Father replied calmly, though Isha noted that his smile had momentarily slipped. Perhaps they had believed that the mace would not raise the subject in a public audience. Isha didn't know whether to be relieved or disappointed that he had.
"Borwin lives the life of a good Christian. Each morning he attends dawn services. At night he donates his time to..."
Borwin has no choice but to be a good Christian, the mace growled, because he knows that for the past 6 months, I have had a new London constable on him like glue. I understand his neighbours are greatly relieved.
This took Isha by surprise. She wouldn't have thought the mace would take an interest in anything that didn't directly affect the Queen. She wondered if Maman knew. Dar was certainly no good parishioner. Their family had attended church only a few times a year.
Borwin has repented sincerely for all of his past acts, the Holy Father replied. He has reformed, and now he wants only to be with his wife and children.
Reformed, the mace sneered. Tell whatever story you like, Borwin. Sooner or later we both know that the sickness inside you will have its way. And when we catch you in the act, I will put you away for good.
My children belong to me,
Dar bellowed.
You have no right to keep them from me.
You gave up your children the moment you laid a hand on them, on their mother.
Distant movement caught Isha's eye. Maman, standing at the mouth of the hallway, her arms folded. Kib had not noticed her or was pretending not to, and Isha said nothing either. How could the mace know about Maman? Had she told him about those days? It seemed unlikely. They didn't get on at all.
My daughter stands there, Dar snapped. Ask her. Ask her how badly she was treated.
Isha froze, for all eyes in the room were suddenly upon her.
Your daughter works for me,
the mace replied quickly, and Isha could tell that he had not been prepared for this turn of the conversation.
She speaks on my command, not yours.
Isha met Dar's gaze and found triumph there. Dar still knew her well. This was a well-calculated gamble he took, that she would not want to reveal her own misery, their terrible past, to tell her shame to strangers, so many of them staring at her now. How could she do that, and then go on? Even if they believed her, how could she go through the rest of her life knowing that this was the first thing everyone would know about her? That she had endured these things? Who could do that? The Queen, her mind answered suddenly. The Queen would speak and face whatever came afterward. But Isha couldn't.
Isha has been through enough, the mace said, and no true Christian would force her to recount the tale here.
Indeed, God loves children,
the Holy Father replied, nodding.
Except the liars.
Watch yourself, Father.
The mace's voice had dropped a note, a danger signal to those who knew him, but the Holy Father didn't seem to care. Isha wondered whether the priest meant to get himself beaten here or arrested. That would surely be a useful event for the Arvath. The mace was too smart to oblige him, or so Isha hoped. This low, quiet anger was much worse than when he yelled. She felt Dar's eyes on her again and resisted the urge to meet his gaze.
Surely, if the child had an accusation to make, she would make it,
the Holy Father remarked, his voice dismissive.
These baseless charges against Borwin are meant to obscure the fact that the Queen's laws are arbitrary, designed to serve her own needs. All men of God should defend him.
her own needs. When the Mort came, the Queen opened the keep to over 10,000 refugees. How many refugees did the Avath take in?
The Avath is sacred,
the Holy Father replied, but Isha saw, relieved, that the mace had broken his rhythm again.
No layman may enter God's house without the Holy Father's permission.
How convenient for both God and your holiness. And what does Christ say about taking in the homeless?
I would like to return to the apostate, Lord Regent,
the Holy Father said quickly. Isha stole a glance at the crowd, but she could not say whether they had noticed the man's quick retreat. Most of them merely stared at the dais with open mouths.
What about Father Tyler?
If he is not handed over by noon on Friday, the church will excommunicate all employees of the crown.
I see. When all else fails, blackmail.
Not at all. But God is disappointed in the crown's failure to address sin in the Tierling. With the Queen gone, we had hoped that you would take this opportunity to criminalize unnatural acts.
Elston twitched beside her. Isha sensed rather than saw it, but when she looked up at him, he looked the same as ever, his face blank and eyes pinned on the crowd.
How's the money for that property tax payment coming?
The mace asked suddenly.
Going to be ready for the new year?
I don't know what you mean,
the Holy Father replied, but his tone was uneasy. The mace burst out laughing, and at the sound, Isha relaxed a bit, the tension easing from her shoulders. She stole another glance across the room and found Maman's eyes pinned on the mace, a tiny smile curving Maman's lips.
You know, Anders,
the mace said,
for a few minutes I wasn't sure what you were doing here, but now I see perfectly. Let me take this opportunity to tell you plain. Come hell and vengeance, that tax payment will be due on February 1st.
This is not about money, Lord Regent.
Everything is about money always. You impose a tithe on the tier and then seek to keep it all, pouring money into luxury, feeding off the credulous and the starving. You profit.
People give freely for a holy cause.
Do they now?
The mace's face broke into an ugly grin.
But I know exactly where the money goes. We picked up two of your enforcers last week. You've been doing business in the creche.
At this, a ripple went through the crowd, and the Holy Father's smile slipped a notch before he recovered.
Baseless accusations, he cried. I am God's messenger.
Then your God is a trafficker in child flesh.
The audience gasped.
And you...
The mace turned to Borwin.
I wasn't sure what you were doing here either, but now I see you plain. You thought that you would have a better shot at your ridiculous argument with a man on the throne. If you ever try to come near your wife and children again, I will...
What? Kill me? Borwin shouted. What threat is that? I'm already dead, my children lost to me and hounded wherever I go. Why not just kill me now?
I will not kill you,
the mace said quietly, his dark eyes cold.
I will take you into custody and allow your wife to decide your fate.